This is The Pulse, stories about the people and places at the heart of health and science. I'm Mike and Scott. This story is from our episode, Do We Need the Wild? You can find us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Ornithologist Drew Lanham grew up on his family's farm in South Carolina in a small town called Edgefield.
Where I like to say white-tailed deer and wild turkeys outnumbered the number of humans, and they still do.
He says wilderness has always meant happiness and freedom to him, but it also makes him remember the painful history that same land holds.
As a kid, I always wanted to fly. I thought that I was the one who would be able to make Wile E. Coyote's dreams actually work. And so I built wings out of cardboard. I jumped out of trees and off of buildings in these vain attempts to defeat gravity. It didn't work. and gravity always won, and I always came back ingloriously to Earth and without much injury other than a broken collarbone. But birds never came back to Earth unless they wanted to. They seemed to be able to defy gravity. That mystery of flight and where birds went, the birds that I would see in the summertime. Scarlet tanagers, for example. When they disappeared in the winter, where did they go? The birds that appeared in the winter, white-throated sparrows. Where did they come from? And so it was this fascination with flight and with wanderlust, really, for me, that sort of captured me and has brought me to this point of being an ornithologist and a birder.
What's your relationship with wilderness?
Well, you know, I'd like to think that my relationship with wilderness is that I grew up in it. And this was before I had any idea of any sort of legal designation of wilderness. I just knew that it was wild. I just knew that there were these places that I could venture into as a kid wandering that home place in Edgefield that I could venture, and it was wild. It was unkempt. There were opportunities to see things there that I wouldn't ordinarily see.
What's that relationship like now when you spend a lot of your time teaching, probably sitting in front of a computer like the rest of us? When do you seek out the wilderness and what does it do for you?
You know, you take on this business of conservation and of being a college professor. I sit in front of my computer a lot, doing the things that professors do or in my lecture hall lecturing to students, but I feel like it's important, it's a critical thing that I be able to relate what I feel, not only the data that I might have collected in some research project, but what I feel wildness and wilderness is. And so daily, you know, there might be a detour that I take on the way to work to visit some wild place. The places that I visit aren't often far off the beaten path. You know, for me, wildness might be a peregrine falcon perched on a wolf tree in the middle of a pasture. But that peregrine falcon represents some other place. It represents maybe the Arctic, where it may have bred and then flown here for the winter. You know, and so for me, I try to find some aspect of wildness every day, and for me it's essential. It's like a multivitamin. The days that I don't get it, it's not good.
You write a lot also about you being a Black man and your relationship to nature and what it means to you, and I just want you to basically describe a bit about how you think about that and how you write about it.
Yeah, you know, in the world of conservation, the world in which I work, at least in North America, you find very few people who look like me who do what I do.
Mm-hmm.
And so that means at professional meetings and even in discussions about what wilderness is and what nature means to us from a conservation perspective, that I feel like there's a perspective that's left out. And as a Black Southerner, especially being surrounded and haunted by the ghosts of enslavement and Jim Crow and all of that evil, really, mm-hmm. that existed and still in some ways persists culturally, there are conflicts, Mike. And to be honest about it, you know, when you're in the South Carolina Low Country and you're looking at all of these beautiful birds that might be in an old rice field. I can remember seeing wood storks, just the phalanx of wood storks, just marching, you know, ankle deep across this marsh. And their bills are clattering as they're sweeping back and forth, trying to find by feel their meal. And there are these beautiful roseate spoonbills that are there that are also sweeping back and forth with these spoon-like bills trying to capture their dinner. And the sun is just at that point where it's the golden hour, and it's the most beautiful thing you could imagine. Alligators are floating amongst them. There's just all of this beauty. And then you think about how, in part, that beauty got there. You're in an old rice field, and that rice field was created by enslaved peoples.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that pluff mud, buried in that pluff mud, is the pain of the past. And as a Black man, I can't ignore that. And I don't want others, no matter what color, to ignore that, to understand that the birds that they see now, as wild as that place may seem, that place was in part created by human beings who were forced, who were pulled up by the root from their home place, likely West Africa, brought to North America because of this skill, this ability to move water and to grow rice, and to grow rice here in a way that made people unimaginably wealthy. But then hundreds of years later, you know, what we're looking at the result of what they accomplished. And so as a Black Southerner, I try to tell those stories, and I try to tell those stories so that people understand that what we see in wildness has often been impacted by humans before us. I owe it to my ancestors as a Black man to not look past their pain at the birds that are there. And so, again, when I do a bird walk anywhere, one of my first imperatives is to understand the culture, understand the history, so that I'm not stepping across it, but rather that I'm stopping to honor what that is. It's a moment to engage. It's a moment to immerse. It's a moment to, again, to take a legacy of pain and try to push it forward in another way.
So we're hearing red-headed woodpecker. That's a red-shouldered hawk that we just heard. That here. There. The red-headed woodpecker. The queer, queer. There. They kind of scolded. Red-shouldered hawk again, which you'd expect to find in bottoms like the one.
Drew Lanham is a professor of wildlife ecology at Clemson University, and some of the recorded bird sounds you heard in this piece came from the Cornell Lab of Ornithology.
Down here. And pecking. They are probably red-headed woodpecker. And actually above us you can see chimney swifts.